You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. And here today, we are going to be continuing our recap of the Ravens 2021 draft class. We now know all 8 selections that the Ravens ended up picking. They will now be able to come into their professional organization in the Baltimore Ravens and try to make an impact. And here with us today to break down those 8 selections a bit further, get some analysis from him, is our regular Taco Tuesday guest in Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, overall, I'd say it was a pretty successful draft for the Baltimore Ravens. Didn't make a ton of moves, but did trade back in the 4th round into the 5th, picked up an extra 2022 4th round selection. How you doing and how you feeling today?
Doing quite well. The best weekend of the year from my perspective is come to a conclusion, and it's exciting, and now we know where the chips lay. The Ravens ended up, you know, sitting tight and didn't make any trades on day 1 or day 2, which was a little surprising, but I think they definitely got a couple of immediate impact players as well as some developmental pieces and are going to be in a good position, you know, getting guys like Tylan Wallace and Dalen Hayes and Ben Mason, who have a ton of playing experience, you know, in Power 5 programs, and being able to have Sean Wade, someone that had a really great 2019 and struggled a lot in a different position in 2020, playing on the boundary, and has some things to clean up. And the Ravens got some pretty high profile players. I think we're starting to see some themes with Eric DaCosta for sure as well, now that he's had 3 draft classes turned in. And it was an interesting year, interesting 2 years because of COVID, back-to-back draft classes. And DaCosta definitely went with the Power 5 players across 3 drafts. Now he's only taken 3 players that were not in the Power 5, which is a far cry from the days where Ozzie Newsome's taking guys out of, you know, Southern Missouri State and Nicholls State and all these smaller schools. So it's definitely been a paradigm shift in many ways, but the Ravens kind of stood tall and trusted their board. They said they had 200 players just about ahead of the draft, which from what I heard, you know, 7, 8, 9 GMs talking about how many players they had, it sounded like the Ravens had a lot more players on their board. So they were comfortable kind of sitting back and waiting and getting some guys. So I was excited to see what happened at the end of day 2. And then of course, you know, you sometimes expect to hear a lot of names called on day 3 that you're not really familiar with or you haven't heard of. And that wasn't the case, you know, guys that were at the Senior Bowl, guys that were pretty big players on big programs in Ohio State and Michigan and Notre Dame and Oklahoma State. So it was an exciting draft for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was overall a very successful draft for the Ravens, and they were able to fill in a lot of needs that they had going into the draft. Obviously, they still have a few more here to fill over the coming months leading up to the start of the 2021 season, but they have some time to do that. So Spencer, over these 3 segments, I do want to kind of just give you the floor to talk about each day. We'll start here with day 1, move into day 2 in the second segment, and finally day 3 in the third segment. So the Ravens having 2 picks on day 1 in wide receiver Rashad Bateman at number 27 and at number 31, edge Adafe Owe out of Penn State. 2, I think, need-based picks, but also you could argue in some cases they could have been one of the best players available for a lot of teams. Certainly Baltimore had them very highly rated on their board. What did you think about these selections as they were made? And I know you've done tireless work kind of scouting these prospects and a lot of different prospects over the course of the pre-draft process for 2021. What do you see in these 2 players, and how can they impact Baltimore early and often?
Well, we'll start off with Rashad Bateman, and it was an interesting point of view. You know, this was maybe the first time last year a little bit. I liked Patrick Queen a lot, and I didn't even think he was going to be there. It felt like fans got really high on Rashad Bateman, and I was a little bit confident that he might fall into the second round towards the end of the draft, but he was my prediction for the Ravens. I thought they would take Bateman and then trade down just, you know, before the draft, and made my final predictions. And a lot of fans wanted Rashad Bateman. He's kind of been the talk of town for quite some time. I've been profiling Bateman for a long time, and he just has the frame, the play style, the 3-level balanced route tree and ability to work inside, outside, you know, on the boundary with his back to the ball, as well as over the middle of the field with toughness. And he is a professional route runner. So it was something the Ravens lacked, and they lacked that presence where when the Ravens want to go into the 12 personnel or the 22 personnel or 13 personnel and have one receiver on the field. And they only targeted ISO receivers, receivers that were detached from the boundary. That's that classic X you talk about, that lone receiver that is on the line of scrimmage that can't come in motion. That's the X position. And having a guy that can consistently win and command targets. And the Ravens only threw the ball four times to wide receivers, seven times total, three were tight ends, two players that were detached from the formation at that X position or that were ISO. And that was not acceptable because the team that loves to run the ball so much, that loves to go heavy, to not have that sort of balanced, you have to respect the deep threat, you have to respect the inside ability, you have to respect the strength as well as the quickness, as well as the speed. That balanced receiver is something that the Ravens have lacked for such a long time. And to have Rashad Bateman, who, despite being a relatively younger prospect, he is 21 years old. He will begin the season at 21 years old. He has such a polished game. And, you know, I just believe that he thoroughly has such a balanced skill set. The only issue I think there could be is that he kind of has a false step. In other words, he steps back before he moves forward on his release. And I think maybe some longer, stronger cornerbacks will be able to give him a little bit of trouble, but the Ravens will be able to do some things and put him in motion at times and use some other formations as well to really get him going. But he just has that balanced, versatile skill set that the Ravens have lacked. They have Marquise Brown, obviously, who can take the top off, and he is really difficult to press, but doesn't have the biggest catch radius, isn't an imposing presence to go win contested catches or anything like that. And then you got, you know, Mark Andrews, who's not going to be able to run away from a cornerback, and you've had other receivers that don't really threaten deep. Willie Snead, Miles Boykin's game obviously hasn't come to fruition yet. So Bateman was a very assuring pick that the Ravens are going to properly get this little wide receiver narrative, all of these question marks, and when is it going to happen? And are you helping Lamar Jackson? All of those concerns to bed with that pick. So it was quite interesting. You know, there was some late rumors they liked Greg Russo. There was definitely rumors that they liked Alex Leatherwood and Ben Albright, who does great work for KOA Denver and is one of my favorite insider type of guys that genuinely doesn't talk out of his rear end. He said that there was no possible way Alex Leatherwood would make it past the Ravens at 27. So it's interesting to see how they don't end up getting a tackle despite, you know, definitely wanting to throughout the draft. And Tevin Jenkins, you know, is sitting there, and there's some rumors, you know, he had some hip issues and teams didn't see him as a left tackle and so on and so forth. So that was definitely, you know, feeling like it was going to be the pick at 31. And no, it's Odafe away. And he is someone that it feels like everyone wants to call a really high ceiling, low floor player. But that's not what I saw on tape. And I didn't study him a terrible amount. He really, really kind of went in the face of what the Ravens traditionally do. They usually value production in terms of tackle for loss and sack so much in the draft. And that's showing Eric DaCosta maybe deviating from the ways of Ozzie Newsome very much so. Not taking smaller school players, not valuing that. And he's by far the best tester. I mean, he's one of the best testers of all time athletically, but in terms of his on-the-field game, he's a really disruptive run player and a really consistently stout run defender who can stack, who can shed, who can jolt a tackle or especially a tight end back into the play. He has good pursuit speed. I'm not sure, you know, maybe if I ever was able to see a 4-3 player on film, Penn State players do tend to run a little fast, but you definitely see someone who is a threat to catch a quarterback from behind, and quarterbacks aren't going to be able to really pull away from and angle up towards the boundary and go hurt the Ravens defense. They're going to be forced to the sideline. And, you know, with Patrick Mahomes and some of the mobile quarterbacks in the AFC, that's something that you need to see. That's something that you want. You want that closing speed. That's something Matt Judon had quite a good bit, that pursuit speed, that backside speed, the ability to run through the whistle and go make those plays. So you see the pass rush ability at times. You see the get off at times. Definitely had a lot of run responsibility. Definitely was a super disruptive player. Sometimes misdirection or sometimes some different things can get a hold of him, but he plays the option really well. A lot of times able to surf where he kind of sits down and gets into that real low linebacker looking stance and rides through the mesh point and able to stay with a running back and then crash to a quarterback or vice versa, depending on what kind of option it is. So I think he has an ability to play against the run that makes you pretty comfortable taking him in the first round. I don't think a lot of people talk about that enough. And of course, everybody wants to go talk about the zero sacks and blah, 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 but they don't look at his run defense. And that's how you got to be solid enough to execute assignments and gap fit properly and understand concepts and process different types of run schemes. And that's something that I think it was definitely a strong suit for him. And you could see tangible improvement in terms of pass rush. You know, he was super disruptive. He had 10 pressures in one game against Indiana early on this past season. That was a team that gave Ohio State a run for their money and it was one of the best teams in the Big Ten by far, and had a really strong year, had a ton of NFL players. So you see some flash there. There's definitely some work to be done, but you hear outside linebackers coach Drew Wilkins and Wick Martindale talking like this guy had the best workout we've ever seen. So started doing a little digging after they drafted him. And, you know, you see the difference, the way some guys just kind of hit the pads when they're going through drills. And there's a really fun video of John Randall, the Hall of Fame Minnesota Viking. And you kind of see him just going through some drills where he's with coaches with pads and you see him and his teammates doing it. And he was a Hall of Fame player. And you just see that the pads get hit with a little more force. He just moves a little bit more violently and a little bit differently. And I think that's the best way to describe Odafe Owe, a guy that moves a little differently. He has an incredible amount of athleticism, a fluidity to him. Definitely would like to see him be more violent consistently. He does have so much finesse to him. He tested that way. He is such a great athlete. But there are certain times where maybe a running back will get assigned to him in pass protection, and you'd like to see him just make them pay for having to step up in pass protection. Instead, he tries to give him a shimmy and a shake and isn't able to go generate a pressure or to really blow it up and force the quarterback to have to leave. So I think bringing out a little bit more violence, having him be a little bit more snap decision maker in moments of hesitation where there might be some space between him and the quarterback for him to go close. And he might kind of break down early to make sure the quarterback doesn't get away, but the quarterback's able to get the ball out because of that. So of course you don't want him to go whiff and be too aggressive, but it's finding that Goldilocks happy medium of being aggressive, being violent, while also being in a position where you're allowing your teammates to rally to the ball and make plays. So I do think he's someone that is going to have to adjust to maybe dropping back into coverage more, being a little bit more versatile. He did align in a two-point stance at times for Penn State, but it felt like he was definitely with his hand in the dirt a little bit more so. So there's going to be some complexities to playing edge in the Ravens defense. They ask a lot of their Sam and of their rush linebackers, setting the edge, dropping into coverage, being able to rush the passer, being able to stunt and loop. Anything that an outside linebacker could have to do in any defense, they have to do in the Baltimore Ravens defense. So it's going to he's going to be tested of how cerebral of a player he is and how quickly he's going to be able to adapt. And it feels like he's someone who's athletic enough to play that Sam linebacker position in a couple years, but having him just kind of maybe sit and set the edge and drop into coverage occasionally and trying to get him in space where he can close and be an unblocked rusher is something that Wink Martindale is going to have a lot of fun doing. And having a guy that has his explosion, his agility, his speed, his length, his prodigious length, is going to be a lot of fun for Wink Martindale. And you can just see how excited Wink and Drew Wilkins were to have him picked. And I think that was a little bit of a wild card pick, but is similar to Patrick Queen last year, maybe a guy who could have gone back to school perhaps and would have gone a lot higher in this draft. It probably would dominate a lot more next year in college football, and the Ravens just get them ahead of time and get them working, get them into their system, and are going to ask a lot of them at first, and they're going to have their bumps in the road and then be able to have an offseason following and adjust to the speed of the NFL and make plays. So I think Owe is going to be someone who's really exciting in this defense, and thinking about Bowser, his athleticism, and thinking about Patrick Queen and Malik Harrison and the play speed that Deshaun Elliott has in the box and the physicality Marlon Humphrey brings and some of those big boys they have down inside is going to be a lot of fun. Both of those positions are positions of value, wide receiver and edge rusher. Those are the high paid positions among, you know, tackles and those and cornerbacks as well. And the ones that are kind of just below quarterback in that sense. So you definitely see the positional value. You see them addressing areas of need, areas where they definitely needed to replace players and get their rooms rounded out. So the Ravens had a pretty explosive first round, two guys that tested well and have a ton of potential.
Yeah, I'm all on board with these first two picks. You mentioned it, Spencer. It was really good for the Ravens to go out there and get players who filled those positional needs, but they also were very high on. I think, you know, when you look at Owe in particular, you know, it's something where the Ravens have had that success kind of with those developmental pass rushers, the later round ones like Matthew Judon, Za'Darius Smith, to name just a few of the many. But now you have a guy who had the athletic traits to be taken in the first round. You know, some people say he did test into the first round, and that could be true to an extent, but he showed that, you know, sacks are sacks, and we've seen the Ravens and their hot and cold relationship with pressures, and they've been a very high pressure team at points, but you know, getting the quarterback down sometimes can be an issue. It comes in spurts. So the Ravens now can develop a guy like Owe into someone who you mentioned can drop a bit back into coverage, and he's already good against the run and doing that. So being able to hone in on those skills a bit more. And for Bateman, he's someone who I think is already a decently complete receiver, does have to, again, work on a few things, but such a sharp route runner, someone who can get open and catches contested footballs, goes up for the football. I think they both fit the Ravens' offense and defense, you know, the positions they'll be playing and the areas they'll be playing in really, really well for this team. So two great values for Baltimore. But we're going to head into our first break, and when we return, we'll be shifting to day two of the 2021 draft for the Ravens. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at Bet Online. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of our UFC and MMA action. Before the next page, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today, ring sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters of each produced a uniquely beautiful ring. Ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece, they're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10x10. This collection features high-quality fine jewelry that will surprise and delight and is fairly priced, so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. If you're on the hunt for the perfect unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10x10 only at BlueNile.com. We return with our second segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, after the Ravens ended up having, I think, two very good first-round picks in Rashad Bateman and Odafe Owe, they end up not having a second-round pick and having to wait a long, long time over the course of day two to make their first day two selection at pick number 94. They also had one at 104. At 94, the pick was guard Ben Cleveland out of Georgia, and then at 104, cornerback Brandon Stevens out of SMU. So two interesting picks, two different ones. I think the Ben Cleveland one was a lot more highly regarded by many people than the Brandon Stevens one. You know, I don't think a lot of people had heard of Brandon Stevens before he was actually picked. So Spencer, I'm again going to give you the floor here. What do you think of these two selections for the Ravens, and what can their impacts be in Baltimore?
Well, first off, Ben Cleveland is a player who is a perfect scheme fit in his ability to hit fit in that man power, larger, stronger play style, someone who's going to be able to really set the line of scrimmage, to really down block and create creases and cut back lanes. You're going to be able to run behind him, and he has outstanding functional strength. He is a bear, and it you know, you can look at him and make that assumption, but he really plays like it. Whereas, you know, a Deontay Brown out of Alabama is another player that was linked to Baltimore quite a bit, but he was more of a finesse pulling player that was lighter on their feet and did have a really big boxy frame. But Cleveland plays with that strength. His feet are not the quickest in the world. You don't want him to, you know, the Minnesota Vikings aren't going to be drafting Ben Cleveland to go consistently attack linebackers in space. He's not a guy that you're going to be asking to run 35 yards downfield, even though he did test crazy well at the combine, but he's not someone that you're going to be asking to rely on their quickness as much. But he does have a very quick upper body. You can see him really latch on and kind of surprise and shock a lot of pass rushers when he's passing off in, you know, against stunts, against games. He's very seems to be a cerebral pass protector in that sense. He understands when defenses are trying to twist, or they're trying to slant, or they're trying to have a delayed creeper blitzer or something of the sort. And you see him very sudden with his upper body. The only, you know, area of concern is he's got to get the feet to match, but with his monstrous frame, he's probably not going to. So just the more intelligent he can become over time, and the less surprised he'll be able to be in better positions. And the worst case right now is that, you know, some of the more dynamic lateral athletes with great quickness might be able to get right around him, and he's not going to be able to get a full man. They're going to give him a half man, and he's never going to get more than a half man. But you know, when you're in a phone booth with him, that is not a fun matchup for anyone. I think he's a sound pass protector. I think that you can ask him to pull, and he has that very sudden, violent upper body. The Ravens have struggled to really run a ton of inside zone, a lot of heavy, powerful, downhill kind of concepts. Last year, they had to switch to so much power and so much pulling to try to, you know, get defenders to process instead of just being able to line up and push them off the line of scrimmage and bully them right downhill. Having Zeitler, having Cleveland, and potentially kicking Bradley Bozeman inside, who will be, you know, a much larger, more powerful center than he is as a guard, is going to be a way of running a more complete, complex, diverse rushing attack. Whereas the Ravens really had to ramp up the man power concepts, all of the bash options and the veers and all that stuff, which does work so well for the Ravens. But when you start to play, you know, the playoff caliber defenses that have smart fronts, they're going to be able to process well. They're going to be able to fill well. They're going to be comfortable in their secondary to hang on the outside and not be worried about it. And that's what the Ravens saw against the Bills. That's where the Titans have given them some trouble, just kind of stacking the box with 10 defenders and some too high structures where safeties are able to come downhill and fill and kind of see what's happening in front of them, so that when the hole emerges, there's going to be a safety there. And usually those playoff caliber teams have some darn good safeties in space. So that's where Bateman comes in, being able to win in those one-on-one situations. And that's where Zeitler and Cleveland will help, being able to just simply double team and work combos and come attack right downhill. Cleveland, in my opinion, he had a little ankle issue at the Senior Bowl, but on the first day, he was looking like the most dominant lineman, especially among the interior linemen. His ability to anchor is almost comical. He makes pass rushers that are, you know, guys that got drafted, guys that lit up the college ranks look like, you know, a dad and a son trying to wrestle in the backyard. He just has a different type of anchor. He can really stop bull rushes head on. Those powerful interior players like Cam Hayward and some of those guys aren't going to be able to consistently just drive him off the ball or anything like that. He's going to give them a lot of trouble, and it's going to be a heavyweight fight. So Cleveland is a guy that fits their scheme really, really well. And I think was a great pick from what John Harbaugh was saying. You know, maybe they always blow this kind of smoke, but he was saying they're getting pretty antsy, and he wanted Ben Cleveland very badly. He was the one that was really advocating for Cleveland, and he wanted the Ravens to trade up a little bit. And Eric DaCosta kind of stood tall and waited for Cleveland and waited for their pick. And he was there. And because he's such a great fit in their offensive line, it feels like other teams might not have valued him as much, but he's a player that really interests me. You can go watch him against Alabama this past year, and he was consistently moving guys. The functional strength is just crazy. And Brandon Stevens, I'm not going to pretend to know too much about. I don't think a lot of Ravens people, Ravens fans do, but he was someone that Daniel Jeremiah and Matt Miller had, you know, a lot higher than anybody had realized. And someone who's a spectacular athlete that was running back at UCLA, obviously. And from all intents and purposes, I've only watched about a game and a half of him so far, but he basically just seems like he's struggling right now to really master the press jam technique and some of the transitions and things. But you know, he's not a guy that understands route concepts and how to exactly seal them off and work them to the boundary and things like that yet. But if you're just asking him to go cover somebody in man coverage by themselves, he is a very physical, long athlete that fits that Ravens sort of threshold of height and length and physicality and all of those sorts of things. He has tons of explosion. So having him on a defense where he's playing with one of the smartest cornerbacks in the NFL and Marcus Peters, as well as one of the best press jam corners in the NFL and Marlon Humphrey, he's going to be able to be with those guys every day, and he's an outstanding athlete. So the Ravens definitely want to be able to develop him. He feels like he'll have a ton of special teams impact early on. And a lot of people feels like wanted to call that a reach, but you know, you got to watch the kid before you can start commenting on it. And I feel like a lot of people haven't quite done that yet, but he's someone that was interesting, and the Ravens seem to really want as well. So we'll see how that one pans out. They can never have too many cornerbacks. They end up taking Sean Wade later. We'll talk about in the next segment, but it just was a classic Ravens move. You think that the cornerback, depth chart can't get any deeper, and lo and behold, all of a sudden there's two more added to it. So there's going to be some real fights in training camp. It feels like one of those guys will probably get dealt. And maybe that's a little bit of not just trusting Tavon Young to be able to come and play and all that good stuff. But the Ravens can never have too many DBs. That really honestly is their foundation of their roster construction.
is having a wealth of capable defensive backs. So they add Brandon Stevens, and he's a player that we're going to have to wait and see on.
Yeah, I think these were two good picks. I love the Cleveland pick. He was someone that I was talking about. I had mocked him to the Ravens in a couple of mock drafts that I did because of the scheme fit. You know, very powerful player. You know, kind of reminds you almost, you know, the demeanor of a Ben Powers. And now it seems like there will be three Bens battling for the left guard job in Baltimore with Ben Cleveland, Ben Powers, and potentially even Ben Bredesen, assuming the Ravens do end up moving Bradley Bozeman over to center. And yeah, with the Brandon Stevens pick, I think it's okay to have an initial reaction to a pick based off of just like, oh, you know, maybe the Ravens could have gotten value here, or they could have picked this player and this guy would have been available there. But to completely dismiss a guy after not really knowing a lot about him, I mean, I'll admit too, I didn't really know a lot. I barely knew anything about Brandon Stevens when he was first picked by the Ravens. I had an initial reaction to the pick, and then it's, you know, let's go watch him. Let's go see what he's like. And that's where you can start to, you know, make some assumptions and some judgments. But still, it's going to take a couple of years to really see how these athletic traits that Brandon Stevens has are going to translate over to the NFL game. And it seemed like the Ravens really did value those high athletic testers, those elite athletic traits. And Brandon Stevens does have some of those, where if he does play corner, if he does play safety, it seems like it probably will be at the safety position, the Ravens will be able to utilize him and develop him in ways that I think will be beneficial to him. But we're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be rounding out this episode by talking about day three of the 2021 draft for the Baltimore Ravens. So stay tuned for that, and we will be back soon. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need into a traditional chain storefront. Why draw from pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning in what other counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right locked on there, how'd you hear about us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And we are back. Our final segment of this Taco Tuesday post-draft recap episode of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostrich, your host, still talking with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, on day three of this draft, the Ravens entered the day with five picks, and they ended up having only four, as they did trade with the Arizona Cardinals, sending some picks their way and ending up getting back a fourth round selection in 2022, which I thought, you know, was a good deal for this team. They can use that in a trade. They can pick someone with that selection, but they ended up getting some good players, even though they only had four selections. Wide receiver Tylan Wallace, kind of a best player available pick. It seemed like there was no reason why he should have been available at 131. He was the pick there. Sean Wade in that trade down for Baltimore, the cornerback, was the selection for the team at 160. And then I think the Ravens making some pretty good depth picks. I mean, Dalen Hayes out of Notre Dame was a, I think, pretty good selection there. And then Ben Mason as well, 3 5th round picks. He rounds out the draft. Fullback, tight end, H-back type guy, can also play on the defensive side of the ball. Spencer, 4 picks here. I think 4 decently good players for this team in terms of what they want to do on both offense and defense. What was your overall reaction to these picks?
Yeah, so Tylan Wallace, a guy that it feels like his knee injury really bothered some teams. I know that people were kind of talking about how his twin brother had the ACL issues that forced him out of football, and then he's had some ACL issues, and you know, he didn't quite have the exact same explosiveness. He was a first round player prior to that knee injury, and he comes back and he's a little bit more savvy. But a guy that, you know, has the ability to win in the slot, outside. He had a strong showing at the Senior Bowl, and he just looks like a professional receiver all the way through. He understands how to release quickly. He doesn't take too long to get in and out of his stem or his transitions and find himself some space. And you love the contested catchability as well. And a guy that maybe reminds you of Willie Snead a little bit, but has a bigger game on the outside. And he plays much bigger than he is what everybody loves to say, but he's a super violent blocker. He is willing to put his body on the line. He's willing to run through contact and has been able to really make a name for himself at Oklahoma State. He's been incredibly productive. I believe he's averaged over 100 yards a game each of the last 3 years, which is crazy. He really didn't even run that many routes at Oklahoma State, and he was aligned as the right wide receiver on like 97% of his snaps. So basically teams in the Big 12 knew what was coming and weren't able to stop it. But you're hoping, and Matt Waldman, who does the rookie scouting portfolio, has this big theory basically about how he thinks Tylan Wallace is going to regain a ton of explosiveness. And if that's the case, and if he's able to stay healthy, he is someone who certainly looks the part in terms of having another balanced game. And similar to Rashad Bateman, he has a balanced skill set. He's able to win in different areas, win on the outside. I do think he's best utilized with a little bit more of a vertical route tree, but he does have good stop start ability. He rarely drops a football. A super fearless competitor, and he understands how to flash hands late and separate late so that he can create catches that, the Ravens have sorely missed on some 50-50 situations and things of that sort. He doesn't have a super explosive release as of right now, and press coverage can get into him and get into him a little bit, but he'll keep fighting and keep fighting. And he's trusted to have body control and make plays for the ball. But if you can regain any explosiveness, if he can stay healthy, he just floats in the air. He doesn't have the biggest vertical jump in the world, but his ability to adjust to the ball is something like an MLB outfielder. He's awesome once the ball is in the air. So if he's able to stay healthy yet again, I think that he's someone who could certainly become an impact player down the road and is going to give a ton of competition for Miles Boykin and able to play outside, play inside, blocks really well, and fights really well, man. So he's a fighter, and you got to be feeling quite good about Tylan Wallace to the Ravens. They overcompensated. I think you and I both, Kevin, were in the same boat. We didn't really think they would be going the two wide receiver route, but Tylan Wallace averaging 100 yards a game, showing that he could recover from that ACL injury and still be able to go and play in an all Big 12 level, I think I said Pac-12 earlier, but play in an all Big 12 level is super impressive, and the Ravens just couldn't pass on it. So it feels like that was definitely a best player available situation. And he has that physical presence that the Ravens have lacked, able to have hopefully sure hands and go get those contested catches at the same time. And of course, the Ravens finally make a trade back. I believe the Cardinals traded up and took Marco Wilson, if I'm not mistaken. So the Ravens, again, feeling confident that they could still get some good players later in the draft. And of course, they get a fourth round pick next year. So now they are just completely stocked with picks. Then they go ahead and go get Sean Wade, who had a lot of trouble this past year. He immediately tweets after he was drafted and he says, I was dealing with knee problems. I had a death in the family. You're going to get the best out of me. Last year was not my best. Player who was looked at as a pretty surefire, maybe late first round, mid first round prospect headed into this past year, but went on the boundary and just had problems. He really struggles against jab step releases, seems to really bite on them. And he just didn't feel confident in his press technique and in his recovery. And didn't feel like he had the supreme confidence that he played with when he was in the nickel in 2019. He looked a lot more confident there. He is super aggressive, super long. He hits, man. He's a hitter. He is a pretty sure tackler and can make a lot of plays in the box. I think the Ravens are going to enjoy blitzing him, enjoy, sending him after the quarterback. He's got over 33-inch arms. He was a super high recruit. He tested really well. He has the athleticism. He has, the tools and the traits and the size and the length to be more competitive as a press man corner, but he just didn't seem to have the confidence. Someone whose back pedal wasn't quite as smooth and was a little bit too high, and his transitions weren't the best. And it just seemed like he was really struggling. He really struggled against Cornell Powell of Clemson, who ends up going to Kansas City in this draft, a guy that I talked about a ton. And he was, All-American still and a Big Ten defensive back of the year in 2020, which is interesting because it really did feel like he struggled quite a bit. But in 2019, in the nickel mainly, he made more plays on the ball than he allowed first downs in coverage. So the Ravens probably like him a lot as someone who can play in the nickel and be a matchup defender with some length, maybe against some bigger, more physical type receivers. And Sean Wade is someone that certainly has potential to get back to form, transitioning back into the nickel. And the Ravens hope that, that one release, he just really struggles with outside jab steps. He sets himself up for it, and receivers just gave it to him time after time. Gave him a ton of trouble this past year. But then, you move on to Dalen Hayes, picked at 171, who one of my favorite fits for the Ravens defensively in this draft. He has a pretty balanced frame and size. His length isn't great. It's not bad at all. He's got almost 33-inch arms, 6'3", 250s. He's kind of built, pretty similar to Tyus Bowser. He's not quite the athlete that Bowser is, but he had a similar role at Notre Dame that maybe Bowser had at Houston in ways, playing that overhang-ish Sam linebacker, that strong side linebacker, and was in coverage off the ball a little bit at times, and he was, you know, in a 2-point stance and asked to beat up on tight ends and be able to take on some pulls on the outside. And he was a captain, so that certainly fits what the Ravens like. They're huge on the team captains, and he had a really impressive performance in coverage at the Senior Bowl. He just, you know, isn't the most dynamic athlete necessarily as a pass rusher. It feels like he'll be more of a hustle type pass rusher, but Hayes is a very solid run defender. He can really, really, really stack tight ends. He has a really active punch. He can separate at the point of attack. He can shed. He has a nice two-hand swipe that he can work with. And he seems like a very high character captain, you know, philanthropic type of person that the Ravens love to have. And coming out of Notre Dame, having a ton of experience, he is an older prospect, but he's going to be someone that you just basically trust to execute assignments. While he might not be, you know, an elite level athlete at the NFL level, he is a good enough athlete, and he's a versatile player that you can ask to stack and hold the edge and not get, you know, blocked out of daylight. And he's not going to run himself out of plays when he's holding up the edge, but he's maybe, you know, going to be more of a hustle type pass rusher. So you're just confident in him to step in behind Tyus Bowser and be a special teams player and really work into that complex Ravens defense and be a leader over time. And felt like they got really, really good value. I think that might've been my favorite value of the draft, to be honest, in Dalen Hayes, him or Ben Cleveland. So that was definitely an interesting pick. And then that leaves us with Ben Mason, who the Ravens took with their final pick in the draft. And we end up seeing they kind of did end up condensing those picks. They didn't pick in the 200s and, you know, tried to condense themselves into the first five rounds, which I thought made a lot of sense. And I thought that kind of strategy would be something that they would deploy. But Ben Mason, the guy they announced at tight end, I wasn't super thrilled with that pick, but I could see him of anywhere in the NFL. If there's going to be a great fit for him, it's probably going to be in Baltimore. Another good scheme fit, a guy who tested really well, but you know, he talks about how he's the most physical player, and he, you know, kind of reminds you like an old school linebacker or something of the sort. But you see him, he had some troubles against guys like Baron Browning and some superior athletes in the hole. And you know, I don't think his pass protection was quite as great as you would like to see, and his hand placement wasn't the strongest, but he's going to be a jack of all trades. He's going to be able to work in that fullback role, work in that inline tight end role, and he's going to be able to get on the perimeter and give defensive backs problems and things like that. And I think he will be able to come in and play on special teams and be able to work behind Nick Boyle and probably be able to find himself a spot on this Ravens roster as a good special teams player and a jack of all trades offensively that I'm sure the Ravens will maximize. Greg Roman, John Harbaugh, they love the fullbacks. They love those type of guys. And of course, another team captain and was able to make some plays, loves to hurdle, do all that good stuff that the Ravens like. But, you know, I thought there was a couple more players I was more intrigued by, but again, if anywhere is going to maximize Mason, it will be Baltimore.
Yeah. I think four good picks for the Ravens. The Mason pick I wasn't overly excited about as you kind of talked about there a little bit, Spencer, but it seems like the team really, really liked him and has the ability to, again, use him, like you said, in a lot of different roles in their offense and special teams, wherever you want to put him. He's really that type of versatile player. And the fact that Patrick Ricard is a free agent after the 2021 season, I mean, if he starts to price himself out of Baltimore, maybe the Ravens think, hey, we could have a Patrick Ricard replacement in Ben Mason. But overall, I think this was a very solid draft for the Ravens. I liked the fact that they did condense their picks down. I didn't think 9 rookies were going to make the roster. Even 8, it's a lot because the Ravens have such a deep roster right now, not even factoring in undrafted free agents. Nothing is official there at the time of this recording, but you know, when everybody is signed and they announce who is going to be trying out and who got signed to what contracts, who got what guarantees, right? There are going to be a lot of roster spots that are going to have 2, 3, 4 players competing for them. And that's even without the additions that the Ravens will probably make in the coming weeks and months in free agency. So we'll see what ends up happening. But I think that this Ravens team had a very, very nice 2021 draft. But Spencer, that's all that I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on here, providing your insight on this 2021 draft class for Baltimore. And as we start to move closer to the 2021 season, we'll be able to break down these guys even more and get into just how they'll fit on this team.
Absolutely. I'll be doing tons of film breakdowns, BaltimoreBeatdown.com, as well as on Twitter. The one thing I would like to say is, you know, I would have liked to see the Ravens take a tackle late in the draft, someone like Stone Forsythe, who the Seahawks ended up getting, that felt like they would have get drafted earlier. That's why I was, you know, a little bit wary of the Ben Mason pick, but we'll see how it turns out in the coming weeks in free agency. But thanks again for having me on, Kevin. Also, I forgot to give you congratulations on becoming, you know, the head honcho over at Ravens Wire. So give Kevin a big congratulations. Give him those 5-star reviews. Give Kevin those reviews for the guy who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage 5 days a week coming at you on Locked On Ravens. Thanks again, and I will talk to you guys next week.
5 days a week. You're always appreciated here, Spencer. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be diving into a mailbag with friend of the show, Cole Jackson. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.